Recruiting Trailblazers is now brought to you by Recruiter.com, the hiring platform with the world's largest network of recruiters. Recruiter.com helps employers to recruit talent faster with virtual teams of recruiters, AI candidate matching, and now Recruiter.com video. Recruiter.com video can help shorten your average recruiting process by a week so you can slash your time to hire without slashing your quality of hire. Visit video.recruiter.com and enter code RECRUITER1000. That's recruiter with a capital R and the number 1000 to access the recruiter.com video beta program for free. Again, that's video.recruiter.com and enter code RECRUITER1000. And thank you to recruiter.com for sponsoring this podcast. Coming to you from Silicon Valley, I'm Marcus Edwards, and I'm on the hunt for recruiting leaders, producers, innovators, and pioneers who've made their mark on the industry and can't wait to share their points of view. We'll tackle the tough topics and dig deep to find the answers you're looking for and some actionable advice you can take to the bank. So stick around and stay tuned, and welcome to Recruiting Trailblazers. Okay, I'm very happy to welcome today Nick Livingston to Recruiting Trailblazers. Nick is a TA professional and the founder of Honit Software. He's a math major who moved to New York City originally to get into the music business, but ended up as a rock star agency recruiter instead, and ultimately the director of TA for MTV. He moved back to the Bay to get his MBA from Berkeley whilst running TA for Tube Mogul, and now focuses his efforts on his own company, Honit, which is helping companies simplify the hiring process. We'll get into all of that and a lot more. Welcome to Recruiting Trailblazers, Nick Livingston. How are you, Nick?
Doing well. Thank you, Marcus. Appreciate you having me.
Excellent, excellent. Great to have you on board. And I'm talking to you today in beautiful Costa Rica. Well, you're in Costa Rica, right?
Yep, Tamarindo, a little beach town on the West Coast.
Okay. How did you end up in Costa Rica?
Spent years in New York City and the San Francisco Bay Area, had my third daughter, and cost of living a few years ago just became a little obscene. And, you know, I was working at a coffee shop, working on Honit anyway. And so my wife and I had always wanted an international experience and to give our kids a new language and such. So came down here and have been really happy, with the lifestyle and some of the other attributes of just, you know, living close, next to an airport, good infrastructure. But we live on a dirt road, so it's kind of, yeah.
It's a beautiful country. I actually have been to Costa Rica, had the most scary experience of my entire life when I went whitewater river rafting, wearing a helmet that didn't fit.
Oh, goodness.
Pretty crazy. But anyway, it's good to have you on the show. You've got a multifaceted past. You've been an agency recruiter. You've been an internal recruiter and a leader. Now you're building your own recruiting software, which we're going to get into. So what have you seen? I mean, from a high level, how much do you think this business, talent acquisition, has changed in the last few years from your perspective?
Well, I think the most glaring is the idea of, you know, COVID and that kickstarting or accelerating this whole idea of remote work for everyone. You know, it was already starting to become a thing in the big cities where cost of living was starting. You know, my story, you know, I moved away from the big city because of that, you know, and we're seeing more of that happen. So I think it's this idea of where can you work from and can work still get done? And, you know, companies are starting to put a stake in the ground of where they, you know, and the big companies are starting to say that first. And I think that's going to impact how other companies respond or react. And I think that's already impacting the recruiting process. You know,
yeah.
My clients are talking to candidates and, you know, conversations around what's your policy on remote work is now at the beginning of the conversation. It's not like this thing you squeeze in once you get an offer to try to negotiate a day working from home. You know, it's we assume you guys are remote now, but what's your policy moving forward? Because candidates are actually interviewing with multiple companies, some of which have now an officially remote work policy. So it's no longer about the ping pong tables that we saw 5 to 10 years ago in the world of startups. I mean, this is now a benefit well, I don't even know what we call that.
It's a way of life.
You could call it compensation. It's a way of life. Yeah. There's job title, there's what you're doing. And then there's like, where are you doing it from?
Yeah. I mean, it's funny because it used to be, as you just sort of pointed out, the very last thing, by any chance, is there an opportunity to work 1 or 2 days remote? And that always was kind of viewed as a euphemism for, you know, can I take a day off here and then? And nobody really believed that recruiters or engineers or anybody would be as effective from home as they've turned out being. Isn't that amazing?
I think so. I mean, I think that there's definitely some skills that you can quantify output, right? And maybe those are jobs are going to be easier to shift. And you're like, okay, if you're in sales and you're not hitting your numbers, then, you know, we've got a problem whether or not you're in the office or out of the office. So there's some things like that where you can maybe monitor it. And then we're seeing now technologies kind of start to reach into measuring and, you know, how many emails did someone send or how many web pages did they look? Or, you know, you're starting to, you know, some systems are maybe going too far on that. And I think there's a, if you don't trust your employees, I think that's going to be ultimately a big problem. And there's going to be a branding challenge there, you know?
Yeah. I think nobody wants to be monitored sort of 10 hours a day, every single mouse click, et cetera. But I do think that people have begun to realize that productivity is much more at the forefront of their employers' minds than it ever was before, because as I've stated on this podcast many times previously, the in-office metric of being there and being present in meetings and, you know, having those social business conversations all day long, that doesn't exist any longer. And so really it's down to looking at the metrics of what you're doing and how productive you can be. Now, as a recruiter, it's quite easy to measure productivity, but that doesn't necessarily measure effort, does it?
I don't know that those are correlated all the times. So I think it depends on, you know, the client you're working with, you know, their brand. We talked about, you know, having a big brand behind you makes it probably easier to get a candidate's attention than being an unknown startup with no name, trying to explain this thing that you've built, and I've seen both sides of that. Having, you know, when I used to reach out from MTV Viacom and, you know, people knew that logo. And so you could at least attract a candidate to have an initial conversation, whether or not the role was going to be a challenging next step for them or something that they're interested in, you know, many times they'd take the call. Versus, you know, if you're an external recruiter without a logo, that's going to be harder to get candidates on the phone, or one of 1,000 early stage, you know, pre-seed startups in San Francisco trying to get a senior engineer's attention, that's a very different game.
Very much so. And I think companies are defining themselves now by whether or not they've completely crossed the bridge to saying, yes, you can now work fully remote all the time. And I suspect that most people who have the facility to work fully remotely, in other words, people who don't necessarily live in studio apartments or have, you know, living situations which are too cramped to be able to have a space of their own, I suspect that most of those people would probably prefer the opportunity to work remote all the time with, you know, maybe 1 or 2 days in the office a month or something. But a lot of people are talking about hybrid models now. And of course, a lot of employers have got long leases on buildings that they'd like to fill with people again, haven't they?
They do. I mean, they're seeing that as a, you know, huge line item on the balance sheets, right? In terms of lease space or owning buildings. And, you know, the WeWork model was brilliant and saved companies a lot of that headache starting satellite offices in smaller towns and things like that. So WeWork had a head start of accelerating that growth to say kind of grow within WeWork, right? You could start off as a single office and then, you know, buy a whole floor if you need it, you know, and grow within us. So I think that was brilliant. I think the other thing though, we've got to be a little bit careful what we wish for, right, as candidates and employees, because, you know, I think some of these decisions, you think back 10 to 15 years ago when there was a huge rush for outsourcing. You know, many of the technical or engineering jobs went to India, right? And so I think candidates have to be a little bit careful. If you're trying to say, yeah, we can work for anywhere from anywhere, then companies are going to quickly assume, well, wait, we can actually go one step further and hire people anywhere. And now we're maybe back on this, this outsourcing kick or this, you know, going further down the gig economy side of things where you're not having to pay insurances and things like that to kind of avoid hiring people. And so I do think it's a bit of a slippery slope. I don't have the answer there, but I know we've got to be careful, you know, as candidates demanding like fully remote, because I think then the companies are going to start to decide, well, actually, you know, maybe we could go back to having a few people work in the evenings, night shift, on the other side of the world, and then I wake up in the morning and my deliverable's ready to review, and I don't have to, you know. So, you know, it's you know, compensation is this other piece of it that's very topical, right?
It's a big piece. I think compensation is a very important piece of this puzzle, because, and there are some great companies who are already sort of coming out and saying, we don't mind where you work from, you're going to get paid the same. But obviously that there could be a leveling of the marketplace where people, as you were just saying, where companies think, well, we can hire anywhere in the world now. I mean, obviously, if we have to set up our company in different international domains, et cetera, and adhere to all the local legalities and labor laws, et cetera. But once they've done all that, they can start to actually acquire much cheaper labor than, say, in some of these big metropolitan markets like, you know, New York and San Francisco and LA and all these big places where the cost of living is extremely high. So I think that is going to be an interesting unraveling that takes place. And then the gig economy is sort of another topic, isn't it? Because a lot of companies want to remain a bit more fluid in the way they grow. So perhaps they're looking at ways, and I know for a fact, a lot of companies around here are recruiting contract recruiters right now to help them with growth, as opposed to just sort of racking and stacking full-time recruiters. And the same with engineering talent as well. A lot of my friends who are recruiters in the tech space are reporting that the demand for contract technologists and software developers, et cetera, is on a massive increase right now.
Yeah, I agree. And I think the other fascinating part of this is there's, you know, we almost need to draw a line in the sand where there's people who have figured out or have a skill, right, that they can monetize, and maybe they're really good at a particular thing. Maybe those folks can work independently and can charge a premium from anywhere because they're really good at what they do. And then you have this other folks. I'm really kind of nervous about, you know, you can imagine recent college grads, let's say, who, you know, you used to go take a job at a company and you're in the office and there's training and onboarding and development and you're learning from underneath someone, or, you know, and there's an investment, and some of that just goes with like learning the ropes and developing your skill set and, you know, working on a variety of projects to figure out what you like and what you're good at to then be able to monetize that and make more money, you know, as you get better at it. I'm a little worried at like what happens to those earlier stage employees who haven't, you know, they're not a principal recruiter or a recruiter who's been doing it for 20 years who has relationships and can bring on new recs and new clients. They're 2 years into recruiting. Right. And so they're still, so that you say what, you know, that could be any skill set, a principal engineer who's got a mastery of a particular thing versus an engineer putting in their years and trying to develop their craft. Right.
I think you bring up a very important point. It is important, especially in the recruitment industry, which is what we know, osmosis, or learning the job from within, is very important. It's a very critical part of the process to be able to look over somebody's shoulder or have someone sit with you. So I think there are going to be some problems there for people who've only just joined the business, to not have that sort of opportunity to absorb the skill and the experience from the people around them. Don't you think?
Yeah, I agree. And it goes to, you know, we were talking a little bit about talent strategy, you know, and each company is going to need to figure out their specific strategy. When I was at TubeMogul in Emeryville, California, you know, we weren't in San Francisco. We were across the bay. We were between Oakland and Berkeley in a little, you know, Emeryville. Most folks will know that. But, you know, here we were competing against all the San Francisco technology companies. Emeryville was a little harder to get to because it didn't have a convenient BART station near the office, right? Mm-hmm. And so you're trying to figure out, like, how do we compete with all these folks that live in San Francisco, but Emeryville is kind of hard to get to, right? It's like a reverse commute. And then here we were developing video advertising technology, which was, you know, kind of this new way of looking at, you know, how do you turn digital advertising into TV advertising, you know, through video advertising. So it was pretty early. It was, so there's all these kind of things that were going up against us. And we had to figure out, like, well, if we can't necessarily compete with the senior software engineer in San Francisco coming across the bridge, what can we leverage, right? And for us, we were TubeMogul was a company founded out of Berkeley, University of Berkeley, had good ties to the MBA program there and good ties to the engineering and computer science program there. So we recognized, hey, if we can't hire an engineer that's 2 years out of school, let's put together a great internship program, get interns from Cal their sophomore, junior year, you know, working at TubeMogul, learning the business, you know, honing their skills, And then we'll be the first to be able to get those folks as soon as they graduate. And we were able to convert a lot of those who then became, you know, junior engineers to senior engineers. And that was just a talent strategy that we had to kind of think through and respond to the market with, right? Like, we didn't have a logo. We were in a strange location. It was a hyper-competitive talent market. And then that's what we figured out as a bit of an advantage. We can really create a strong relationship with the local college that was nearby and tap into that talent pool. Yeah. And we've seen kind of university recruiting become its own thing at many companies, right? Like, there's now recruiting teams with, you know, a subset of that organization is now focused on, young talents or university recruitment. My guess is that talent strategy and that location strategy for work moving forward might then also have to think through, you know, physical offices for that maybe earlier talent, you know, that maybe need a little bit more, not monitoring, but like coaching, leadership, learning, all that good stuff that is accelerated when you're working closely or next to someone versus through Zoom calls and such.
Yeah. And obviously, you know, it's going to be interesting what happens over the next 6 months or a year, because there is some light at the end of the tunnel with COVID now, with the vaccines coming out, and there's some success stories emerging from around the world, in the UK particularly. And so potentially people are going to be able to get back into the office, probably under slightly different circumstances. So it'll be an interesting 6 months or a year, won't it, to see what actually sort of shakes out.
It will. And if people spread out a little bit, I don't think that would be the worst thing for our cities, you know, if there's less demand to live in San Francisco, like, maybe the prices will go down and maybe more homeless people, maybe there'll be more availability, you know, and we can think of getting more people in homes that are living on the streets. And, you know, so there may be some upside, not to say COVID is a positive thing necessarily, but I think there might be some upside that come from this. Yeah.
Yeah. It's funny, you talk about talent strategy, and this is a phrase that's being bandied around all the time now, because it's become really apparent to startups that they need to employ a really solid talent strategy out of the box, as opposed to something that they bolt on after they've hired their first 20 or 30 employees. What do you think? What do you think the cornerstones of a good talent strategy, if you were to sit down with a startup and they were to say, Nick, you know, what do we need to do out of the gate here in order to really start to build good pipeline of potential talent for a young startup?
Yeah. And I think it's a great thing. It's a great thing for our profession that they're recognizing it's an important role and sooner in the company, to your point. Like, obviously you need people to build the thing that you're dreaming. And so you need some folks to build it, and then you need people to sell it, and then you need people to support it. And we kind of went through that journey at TubeMogul, which was super exciting. But I think probably if you were to talk with an early founder that maybe didn't hire a lot of people previously, I think that's one of the things we see with earlier stage startups, is if maybe the CEO or the co-founders are, let's say, younger, and maybe they haven't been in a role where they've hired tens or hundreds of people in their career, would just be kind of a heads up to let them know how long it can take to hire someone.
Yeah.
And then, like, as soon as people hear that, they're like, well, wait a minute, we just like raised a bunch of money and we've got all this money to spend on people and it's in our hiring plan and we'll just post the job. And, you know, like 1,000 other companies are doing that too.
And that's where the opportunity lies for a talent strategy, because I think you're absolutely right. They've got a bunch of money. They've got a bunch of people that they'd love to hire, and they don't quite understand the bridge that you need to cross to get from money to good people. And there's a lot of strategy that takes place in order to build an employer brand that people are interested in order to implement the systems and processes that allow for a positive candidate experience, which for me is one of the top things that I think early stage startups need to accomplish, is a candidate experience which leaves anybody who comes in for an interview wanting more, wanting to know more, wanting to be involved, and ultimately wanting the job. And as a recruiter, you know, I've worked with quite a few startups that don't pay a real attention to the candidate experience. They don't do a bad job, but they don't do enough selling. They don't do enough of a good job to leave candidates with the impression that that would be the company that they want to go and work for, especially if they have multiple suitors and multiple opportunities elsewhere. How important do you think candidate experience is?
I mean, I think it's important, and there it has been a phrase we've talked about to for years. I also think the hiring manager experience is super important. I think the recruiter experience is important. For candidate experience, though, I think the way to level set that is just to remind anybody involved with the recruiting or hiring process or interview process that top candidates are interviewing you.
Yeah.
And I think just a reminder that it's not you interviewing them, that interviews are two-way street, especially for in-demand roles where you're looking for someone who's really good at what they do and has options. Just to kind of remind either the co-founder, the hiring manager, the panelists on the interview that, remember, this person's talking to lots of companies right now, and they're also interviewing us, which is, you know, one of the reasons why I think we have to be very careful adding too many steps or friction or quizzes or one-way interview tools to that top of the funnel process, because the best candidates, if you're not willing to talk to them, they're going to talk to your competition.
Yeah, that's so true. And that's the reason why the recruitment industry is going to stick around for a fair few years, because you can't automate relationship development, can you?
I don't think so. I mean, you know, a lot of recruitment and HR technology follows that of sales and marketing technology, right? You know, the drip emails and the, you know, the CRM, right? And so some of these tools just, you know, there's a lag in terms of HR and recruitment technology that from that of sales and marketing, but it's very similar. I think one of the things we're seeing exciting in our profession now is the idea that conversations contain insights and interesting things, right?
Right, right.
You know, and they're business conversations. And when you start to think of interview conversations or recruiting conversations as business conversations or as content, they start to get interesting, right?
Yeah, like, and we're going to get into that in a moment.
Not to hijack it, but it just leads me to that natural progression of like,
expertly done, Nick. And I'd like to start talking a little bit about that sort of conversation intelligence in a moment. So you're extremely passionate about the interview piece, and that's the part that you've been looking to solve at Honeit. Tell us a little bit about, and this is really interesting stuff because I did the demo with you. So tell me a little bit about what Honeit does and how it sort of complements the interview process.
So a lot of the innovation we've seen in talent acquisition and recruitment technology, let's say over the last, you know, 5 years, 5 to 10 years, has been around sourcing. So with Honeit, yeah, we're focusing on what comes after sourcing or what comes after someone expresses interest and says, sure, Marcus, I'd love to learn a little more. All right, how do we get that person on the phone, have a great conversation, and then get them on site with our clients or expedited through the process? So when a recruiter talks to a candidate and has a great call, says, oh my gosh, I just spoke with Marcus, how can I make it really easy to convince my client and equip them with the information they need to understand what I just heard? And for us not to be talking about my opinion or interpretation.
Right. How do you remove the subjectivity out of it and provide the evidence?
Yeah, because a recruiter who's rushing to close a job or is incentivized by commissions to make a placement, right? I think everyone understands there's incentives that may not be aligned with hiring necessarily the best person. And so when a hiring manager gets a submittal from a client either or from a recruiter, either internal or external recruiter, I think there's always some skepticism of like, is this the recruiter's interpretation? Like, are they, is this, does this recruiter know what they're doing? You know? And I think it goes back to this idea of we've heard 6 seconds to review a resume. You know, people have done studies and things like that. And I wouldn't disagree if you're getting a lot of applications. You're kind of just looking for recent title, stability. Did they work in a similar company or industry? And then you move on if not, right? But then I think about the 6 hours a company spends on getting the top talent through the rest of the process, right? Like 6 seconds to review a resume and then like 5 or 6 hours of interview conversations before you actually make the offer with that candidate. And I'm going, it, you know, it took me kind of going to business school in the evenings, you know, learning about how these other departments use data to make better decisions. And I come back to my day job and I'm here scribbling notes, and my recruiters on my team are scribbling notes and we're scribbling write-ups. And we wonder why, like, it takes so long to get a candidate through the process, because we're just kind of scribbling notes and sharing opinions. And so I think about the 5 hours of interview conversations, talking with the hiring manager and the recruiter and the panelists and the SVP, and then maybe even the co-founders at the end. All of those conversations were chock full of questions, answers, stories, explanations, call them insights, that were not captured, right? I mean, customer success calls have been recorded for 20 years for quality control and training purposes. Sales conversations are being recorded to figure out if one rep is selling 10x the rep down the hall from them, right? I think exploring and looking into our conversations in recruiting and interviewing and hiring, it's you can unlock a lot of really interesting insight. And it's just right there at the tip of our tongue.
And so what Honit does is it allows you to go through a series of screening questions pre-agreed upon with the hiring manager, and then allows you to capture those sound bites to then present back to the hiring manager for them to actually hear the evidence for themselves, correct?
Correct. Now, a junior recruiter that's never been a QA engineer, never recruited QA engineers, can include four or five questions when they're talking to a QA engineer. Those technical questions come right from the hiring manager. Hey, ask them if they've ever worked with Selenium and which, you know, if they prefer this or that type of testing framework, right? Sure, I can ask that. And now I can capture the response on the fly, hang up the phone, and in 10 seconds, Slack my hiring manager with the link. It says, listen to this. And that hiring manager can quickly hear those two or three technical answers for themselves and say, wow, you know what? Resume was a little light, but oh my gosh, did she geek out about Selenium or web analytics or whatever the topic is that's most important.
What kind of epiphanies are your clients having when they first start using the software or when you demo the software? Because the hardest part when you're selling any of these types of tools is getting that first conversation. What kind of reaction are you getting in the marketplace when you actually get on the phone and do the demonstration?
Most of the feedback when people see a demo is they're like, where has this been for like last 20 years that I've been recruiting, scribbling notes and, you know, frantically typing notes and summaries. So it's always a little bit of like, where was this? And then once they start using it, we've really designed it easy on the recruiter. So it's just like, click a button, enjoy your conversation, right? We take care of the note-taking essentially. And then I think the biggest aha comes actually from the hiring manager. The first time a recruiter hangs up the phone, creates a link, slacks it to a hiring manager who listens to a few sound bites, they say, in a quote, like, oh my gosh, I didn't know recruiters could do this. Like, and I think part of this is like demystifying like what a recruiter actually does. And I don't think a lot of hiring managers actually know. And there is a bit of a, misnomer, like what we actually do and how hard it is to build a slate of two or three final candidates, right? So the ability for a recruiter to finally show a little work, I think builds trust and credibility with the hiring managers who respect what we're doing. And yeah, you really did get that candidate on the phone. And wow, you really did pitch him well. And you did really dig deep on that phone screen to save me time and help me make better decisions faster. Thank you.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And so some of that just comes with a little bit of evidence versus opinion on the submittal.
Yeah. Do you think there's any chance that there'll be pushback from recruiters to say, well, look, I'm a professional recruiter, an experienced recruiter, and I'm paid to evaluate candidates. Why should I have to present all the evidence as well when my opinion should matter?
That's fine. I mean, we're not trying to say or remove the recruiter's opinion. We just don't want it to necessarily be the only thing, right? And I think so you can say, hey, this candidate's great because of X, Y, and Z and this and that. Much of that's going to be obvious on a resume, right? So hiring managers can kind of see that too. But I think it's the ability kind of to show and to articulate and to back up our recommendation with a couple of sound bites.
Yeah. Do you get a good reaction from recruiters when they first start using this tool, or do you get any pushback?
The pushback that we get is that recruiters are too busy to try it. For folks that have three or four calls through the system, that's kind of our threshold. Do a practice call with a friend or a colleague. Do a practice call with me. Okay, now you're ready to talk to a candidate. Once they do three or four calls to the system, they're hooked and there's no going back to manually scheduling calls, manually scribbling notes, and manually typing write-ups.
So once they're on it, they love it. It also strikes me that it could actually be a good training tool for recruiters as well, because you could use this tool without too much experience as a recruiter and still present a very comprehensive view of what the candidate's capabilities are.
We have a really exciting case study on our blog and on the site from a company called PeopleLift, which are based in Atlanta. They're really like an innovative recruiting firm, kind of RPO model. they've been able to hire new recruiters and train them to make placements in less than 2 weeks.
What kind of people? Placing who?
I think it's a variety of operations, customer success, I think high pseudo technical roles as well. But again, the idea is, hey, these are the questions to ask this type of candidate or for this particular role. Okay, after a call, a TA leader or a staffing manager can review that call without, and you know, when I was doing recruiting, I had my boss breathing over my shoulder for every call. You know what I mean? They were listening to every call I was having, and we sit next in the bullpen, right? A hiring manager though can listen on a new recruiter's call, provide real-time feedback. And then furthermore, which is even exciting, is when a junior recruiter hangs up the phone, they can Slack a link to their boss to say, hey, just spoke with Jill. What do you think of these two sound bites? The experienced recruiter or the manager can, or the account manager can quickly listen to that. Yes, sounds great. Let's submit them.
And I think you've just hit upon a very important point about your software, because I did the demo. It's actually very simple to use. And I think the point that you just made, share a couple of sound bites with the hiring manager afterwards. And the software itself that you show me has the ability for you to be able to just earmark the questions that you think are most important so that you can grab those sound bites afterwards and share them with the hiring manager. And so I think it's actually quite simple to use. And here I am pitching your product for you, but I actually think that it's simple to use and extremely impactful. Even if you just share a couple of like 30 second sound bites, I think it can be a real game changer for the hiring process.
Well, thank you. I mean, this idea around, you know, we all use Slack to be able to collaborate virtually, remotely, right? That whole new future of work. I mean, I think the idea of how do you cooperatively and collaboratively interview someone is another important part of this. And I think the idea of having to have 6 or 7 or 8 separate conversations to get 6 or 7 or 8 people to agree that someone knows what they're talking about, you know, if you capture interview data, you can share interview data and make better decisions together.
Yeah, that is so true. What is your elevator pitch? I mean, when you first start talking to an organization about what your software does, how do you sort of position it out of the box?
As of this week, I've been saying interview sound bites are the future of recruiting and hiring. If we talk about, you know, how we help scheduling, or if we talk about storing interviews in the cloud, you know, some of that stuff just gets a little wishy-washy. So I'm just like, hey, just spoke with Jill. I think she's great. Here's a link.
Yeah. Here's a link. Here's the proof. Here's 2 or 3 sound bites so that you can hear for yourself. I'd give her a big thumbs up.
And in many companies, like ultimately the hiring manager is your client and everybody wants to kind of surprise and delight the hiring manager. So if you can say, hey, hiring manager, spend 2 minutes listening to this rather than another 45-minute phone call asking the same questions, this is where ROI and real things start to happen, you know, where you can quickly make decisions and save. You know, that hiring manager is by definition overworked and stressed because they've got open roles, right? So they're picking up the slack. So whatever we can do to save them a little more time, you know, goes a long way.
Yeah. It's interesting what you just said, because I think from a candidate experience point of view as well, one of the complaints I hear most often is, I've had 5 interviews and I've basically had the same interview 5 times. Oh. I've answered the same questions over and over again. And so your software, it could solve that problem to a certain degree if you capture that data earlier on and have it available to future interviewers before they actually conduct exactly the same interview all over again.
I mean, sharing a few sound bites with the panel to say, hey, these are the questions we've already asked. You don't need to say, hey, what have you been working on? Like that was taken care of 2 weeks ago, right? We want you to focus on this, this, and this. Or, hey, busy co-founder, we can't book you until 2 weeks from now to do the final call with this candidate. What if you could hear a few sound bites and then decide, do you really need another 45-minute call 2 weeks from now that's going to slow things down? Or do you trust your team, like what you hear, and we can go to offer?
I love it. Very interesting stuff. Well, thanks a lot for joining me today on Recruiting Trailblazers. Nick Livingston of Honeit Software. It's a real pleasure. We'll keep in touch and we'll speak again soon.
Thank you, Marcus. Appreciate it.
Okay.
Take care.
Cheers.